Okay, well, welcome back, everyone, from your walk or your discussion. It's great to see you back here in the room all together. And as you all know, our theme for the day is finding joy in spite of it all. And I think this is something that's really on a lot of our minds right now. We see this from the number of people who signed up for our retreat, just in all of our interactions with people we know. As we enter this new year, with all the uncertainty we face about the state of the world, about our country, trying to find some peace and joy in the middle of all the chaos that's going on is a pretty challenging thing. It seems like every time we turn around, there's another natural disaster related to climate change. Hurricanes, tornadoes, floods, and now these terrible wildfires in California. And especially scary because it's not clear that society is going to take the steps that it might take to help alleviate some of these things. And then there are wars and conflicts. The war in Gaza and the war in Ukraine really maybe come to mind first, but many others in Africa, in Myanmar, lots of conflict in the world. And then there's the mood of our own country that's so deeply divided, and no matter where you are on the political spectrum, it's easy to feel like we're often in this atmosphere where there's a lot of fear, a lot of anger, blame, revenge, just really difficult times. Oops. So, this thing is so nasty. So joy and peace aren't exactly in great supply in this society we're in right now that's so divided and so contentious. So how can we find some relief? Some peace, joy, and happiness. James Baraz, who's one of the senior Vipassana teachers in our lineage and who teaches at Spirit Rock, does a course and has written a book on awakening joy. And one of the things he says in this course is that happiness is a choice. So we can make the choice to be happy, regardless of the conditions that we might be in. And now we all want to find happiness and joy. But embracing this idea of choosing happiness, that might not be such an easy thing for a lot of us. My computer is kind of honky. And there may be times when things are so difficult that choosing happiness just seems impossible. It's just kind of something that's too far. And maybe in that moment, it really is too far for us, and we just can't access any kind of feelings of happiness and peace. But we need to remember, too, that because in this moment we can't feel it, it doesn't mean we will never feel it. And it has to be that way forever. It's important to keep that in mind. And another thing, too, not just is it hard because things are difficult to find that we can access happiness, but we might even feel that it's almost wrong to be happy when there are so many awful things going on in the world. And it might feel as if choosing happiness is being in denial of our pain, or the pain of others, or it's kind of like we're just passively accepting all sorts of things that are wrong and unjust as if, well, they're okay. I just want to be happy, putting ourselves in a kind of a bubble. And it's understandable, to have these kinds of feelings. And in fact, I think some of these objections to this idea of choosing happiness are really valid. If we feel that choosing happiness means ignoring everything that's painful and trying to live in our own little kind of enclosed world where everything is always pleasant, or we try to convince ourselves that everything is always pleasant. But maybe we need to stop for a minute and consider what choosing happiness really means. And we can remember too that happiness is one of the basic themes of the Buddha's teachings. He teaches suffering and the end of suffering. And so really the thrust of these teachings is to find peace, to find freedom from suffering, even in a world that is never going to offer us the perfect conditions that we would like and that we feel would do everything to make us happy. And maybe most of all, it's a matter of finding freedom from the painful emotions that this world and the activities that go on in this world stir up in us. Greed, hatred, fear, anxiety, maybe even that impulse to try to just escape into a world of fantasy and illusion and kind of stay in our little bubble and pretend that none of this bad stuff is happening. So how do we find that happiness that the teachings of the Buddha promise? Well, definitely it's not by retreating into the little bubble and only admitting to what's pleasant. You know, the Buddha taught the end of suffering, but he also taught suffering, suffering and the end of suffering. So we really need to investigate and understand our suffering and the suffering of others to get to the end of suffering. So choosing happiness doesn't mean that we lose all of our discernment and we become indifferent to what's harmful. And it doesn't mean that we never feel anger or sadness or pain in response to painful events, whether they're things that happen in our personal lives or in the world. It means more that we're choosing not to be consumed by the anger or the despair or the fear and other painful emotions that these difficult situations bring up. We're going to feel them, but maybe we don't have to be controlled by them, and our actions in the world don't need to come from them. One of our teachers at the Sunday Sit mentioned that maybe the most radical thing we can do in this day and age is to free our minds from those chains of hatred, greed, and delusion. And when we choose to do this, this is choosing joy. It's choosing happiness, not only our own happiness, but the happiness of others too. And this reminds me of a story I've heard about the Dalai Lama that maybe some of you have heard too. At one point, somebody asked him about how he felt about the Chinese and the invasion of Tibet and him having to flee from his country. Was he angry about it? And he said, no, because the Chinese, you know, they came, invaded. They took so much from us. Should I let them take my mind as well? You know, so it's just pointing to this question of what we allow to control our minds. And maybe we can ask this question of ourselves too. Should we let the difficult people in our world fill our minds with anger and hatred and despair, or let them make us feel so powerful, powerless and numb that we just kind of shrink away from everything? Or maybe instead, can we cultivate the qualities of mind that are going to help us to find some freedom from those painful emotions so we can approach all these difficult things with some wisdom and some compassion and some equanimity? It's a challenge, but, you know, it's an important challenge. You know, follow the example of the Dalai Lama. So let's consider this idea that joy or happiness is a mind state that can be cultivated, and in fact that we really would do well to cultivate for our own benefit, for the benefit of others, and for peace, as Ajahn Suchito says. So On a practical side, the teachings offer us some really straightforward things we can do to cultivate happiness. And one of the first ones is to cultivate an attitude of gratitude and appreciation. You know, just recognize the good things we have in our lives and appreciate them. And I know from my own experience how easy it is to forget this, to dwell on the things that aren't going right or that aren't right, and, you know, things that you feel like you can't have. So much that we forget the wonderful things that we do have. We're so quick to notice what's wrong and so quick to see what's going well and to focus our minds on the problems of the world and the problems of our lives. And of course, you know, seeing these clearly is an important thing. And it's a good thing that we recognize difficulties. But if all we see is the bad and we don't see the good, all we see is the unpleasant and we don't see the pleasant, that's also a form of delusion and blindness, and it's not clear seeing. So in the Mahamangala Sutta, the Buddha gives a list of blessings that we can reflect on. And some of these are things that you might expect him to bring up, like being able to hear and practice the Dharma, being able to associate with wise beings as we do in the Sangha, living an ethical life and doing good things. But there are also some that are mentioned that we might not necessarily think of, you know, things like having a good education, being skilled in your work, being able to take care of your aging parents, you know, one of those things that is a painful thing, but a very satisfying thing. So there's a wide range. So I'd encourage you to take a wide look at your blessings. Don't use a narrow frame, use a wide frame. And we all have our particular blessings, small and large, that we can reflect on and really appreciate, knowing that things don't necessarily have to be so, and they won't always be so. So we're very lucky to have these blessings and beautiful things in our lives. Something that can be a little harder to do, that we'll practice a little bit with later in the day, is to find joy in the good fortune and happiness of others. One of our guiding teachers, Tweri, talks about this in a really nice way, and she says that this finding joy in the good fortune of others is a little bit like borrowing a little joy from people who are experiencing it. And, you know, yes, it's possible to feel jealousy and resentment, and those can get in the way. You know, that's one of the issues about doing this. And we can find ourselves wondering, you know, why are they getting this good fortune and not me? Those are all things that come up for all of us. But we can also think about how much more joy we can have in our lives if we can take pleasure not just in our own good fortune, but the good fortune of those that we know around us and the good things that happen to other people. So cultivating this sympathetic joy is another thing we can do. And then there's the joy and happiness that we get from living our lives in a way that really contributes to happiness. And part of this is something we've been doing at SIMS over the past year, cultivating the paramis, cultivating these qualities of mind that really help us to find wisdom and happiness. And some of these I'm going to call out in particular as being related to joy, and one of them is generosity. And generosity, having the willingness to give and to share, is a really special source of joy. And it's said that it's especially joyful because you can feel joy when you're planning your gift, you can feel joy when you're giving your gift, and then you can feel joy when you're remembering the generosity that you showed or your generous act. So it's a kind of a happiness that has a long shelf life to it. And then there's the happiness of living an ethical life. You know, when we're not harming ourselves or other beings, we feel happier. I think that we all know that when we're doing things that we kind of know that we shouldn't do, you know, lying or stealing or, you know, leading a life of crime, you know, of course, getting involved in unwise sexual relationships, all these kinds of things, we suffer the consequences. And those around us suffer as well. We might feel guilt and isolation because of these things we've done, that we need to hide from other people that might be upset if they find out about this or think badly of us. And then we suffer the consequences of how people feel when we treat them in ways that aren't so great. You know, it doesn't do a whole lot for our relationships. So it's really a good thing to be free from different harmful behaviors that we might indulge in. There's just a lot of relief in that. And we can experience what they call the bliss of blamelessness. You don't have to worry about all these bad consequences that might come up from doing this stuff that you really ought not to be doing. And then the cultivation of metta, loving kindness. Feeling love really brings happiness. Feeling love and kindness for beings that are close to us, beings we don't know so well, and even for those that are really difficult. And cultivating metta for difficult people is pretty challenging. I think we all know that. But it is a really good way to help us from getting so lost in the pain of anger and judgment when it comes to these people that we just can't see things straight, and we maybe do things or say things we shouldn't say. It maybe helps us to avoid letting them take over our minds. And something that I've been thinking about lately too that is really helping me is to cultivate attention and interest in whatever we're doing or experiencing. It's kind of like cultivating mindfulness, but maybe with a little bit different slant. Because when we actually pay attention to something, when we connect with it, when we get interested in it, then when we feel that interest, we really get to feel, to borrow a phrase from Steve Armstrong, who's one of my teachers and a senior teacher in our lineage, we feel the delight of the mind in knowing. That kind of interest, it energizes it, it perks us up. We're like, ooh, what's going on? What is that? You know, that happiness from seeing and understanding whatever it is that's arising. Sometimes even if it's something that's maybe somewhat difficult. And this is a source of happiness, I think, that we often forget about. So it's one of my intentions this year to really remember it and find that interest and joy in whatever I'm doing. But maybe the ultimate way, really, to choose happiness is to understand and to realize the Four Noble Truths. And those of you who are involved with SIMS know that this is the topic that we have for our study for this year. And doing this, really understanding the Four Noble Truths, realizing the Four Noble Truths, you know, this is no small undertaking. This is a really big job and not a very easy job either, because it means that we're taking time to really understand our suffering and unhappiness, not trying to get rid of it or brush it away, but really getting to know it and knowing all about it and what it feels like and what it is. And also it means taking time to learn the difference between the painful experience itself and then all that extra stuff that we add that makes it even more painful. You know, all of that catastrophizing about what hasn't happened yet, blaming ourselves because we think this shouldn't be happening, blaming other people because we think we shouldn't be, think this shouldn't be happening. Retreating into, you know, fantasy world so we don't have to see that painful thing. So we need to see all of that too. And what's maybe hardest is we need to see all of that well enough and understand it well enough to get to the point where we know it so well and we feel it so well that we can actually let go of all that extra stuff, you know, to the point where we see that it's just too painful and it doesn't even make any sense anymore, and it kind of starts to fall away and fade away. And then we can really feel that relief and happiness that comes with the end of suffering, at least in that particular time and for that particular moment. So it's a really slow and difficult process, and a very painful process sometimes, but we can remember that at the end there's the reward of being free of the unhappiness that's caused by hatred, by greed and delusion, and allows us to really have that kind of a mind that's able to act for good in the world with compassion and with wisdom. And wow, what a beautiful aspiration that is. What a beautiful aspiration. It may seem a long ways away and far out there, but still, may it be so for all of us. So there are some thoughts about approaching this idea of choosing happiness. Some maybe different ways you might do, things you might do to help encourage joy and happiness in your own lives.